Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN1050. Dave Feschuk's back in here from the Toronto Star. Good to see you, Dave.
Great to see you.
Really? That sounded very genuine and... That was the most flippant, like, I don't really want to say this, but I guess I have to say something. Great to see you.
I'm working on
it. Put some more energy into
that. I'm working on my genuineness. It's a chore for me.
I would prefer if you just said, honestly, I don't want to be here right now. Like, I don't know why I committed to it. They asked me, like, months ago. I've got so many more things I'd rather be doing. I got no problem with that kind of honesty. That's how you feel, Dave. Just shoot, man. Shoot from the hip.
Well, I'm big on staying employed. That's my thing. If I was completely honest, every day of my life, I'd be a bum. I'd be homeless and jobless.
Yeah.
And familyless.
I was thinking about that earlier today, actually, because we do have a great gig. We got a fun gig. I genuinely love coming in here and talking sports and talking life and whatever happens to pop up. But because of the job we have, where it's a very unique job. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a dream job for a lot of people.
No doubt.
It's difficult to complain about it, but we are human. You know, there are days where you wake up just like everybody else, and you're like, I don't really want to do this. Like, you never hear that from athletes. But no. You know that that's a fact. Like, especially baseball, when they play every single day. You think the Blue Jays want to play tonight?
Exactly.
Do you think they really want to play?
Not even close.
I don't think they really want to play tonight.
The greatest team in the world comes to town. You're having a miserable season. You're 27 games out of the AL East lead. You're going to get dummied by these studs from Boston. And you really want to be at the office?
I don't think John Gibbons really wants to be at the office. Like, that's kind of the news item of the weekend. What's going on with Gibbons and the Jays? And everyone has heard this in the media world and... In and around the Blue Jays, that Gibbons would be okay with walking away, and the Blue Jays are kind of thinking it might be time anyway. And I don't necessarily blame him, if we're being honest, for him to look at this and say, all right, we're coming off 76 wins a year ago. We're going to win less than that this year.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably not going to win a lot of games over the next 2 years moving forward. Do you really want to be a part of that? But... if it's true, and to be fair to Gibbons, he hasn't said anything publicly, and he's not dumb enough to say anything publicly.
Why would he?
He's never going to say anything on the record or talk to anybody and say, guys, I'm dying to get out of here. If they fired me today, it would be great. He's not going to say that. But nobody in my lifetime in Toronto sports, in terms of managers and coaches of the big three teams, Leafs, Raptors, Blue Jays, has been given more of a free pass or cushy covering than John Gibbons because of who he is.
Yeah.
Everyone loves John Gibbons. Everyone loves him.
It's very true. It's very true. But it's also, I think, don't you think, though, Hayes, it's also got something to do with we've come to the realization over the last 20 years with sabermetrics and analytics and all the rest of the analysis that's done in baseball that managers are essentially useless. Like, that basically, if you just kind of managed by numbers and probabilities and do a half decent job at that, you know, you don't really need, you know, the charismatic ball busting, you know, Tony La Russa's of the world. You don't need those guys. Like, managing a baseball team, and the pay scale probably tells you, like, they're probably the lowest paid of the big four coach manager jobs, right? I mean, they call them managers, but they're essentially coaches. They get paid the least. Like, basketball coaches get paid more. Football coaches get paid way more. Hockey coaches get paid more. You know, baseball managers are like, that's like a, it's like a chump job.
It's kind of like a babysitting thing. Now, he's been well compensated. They're still making a lot of money.
They're making good money for what they're doing.
Yes, and they do manage or coach more games than anybody else. Like, your comparison to football is a great point. Like, now, football coaches grind. It's not just about what you're doing when you're playing. They're working Monday through Sunday, every single day, and through the off season, going over tape and scheming, and they factor into the outcome of sporting events
way more,
much more than a manager does, no question. But you need a manager to make sure your clubhouse doesn't get too carried away or too ridiculous.
My thing is, like, can a manager really control that?
He's supposed to. I think he can. I think he can factor into the atmosphere in the clubhouse, which. This is what is so intriguing about the baseball world, because that is an intangible that cannot be defined by numbers.
No.
So many of the stats geeks are like, I don't even want to talk about that because I can't quantify it, so it's stupid, so it doesn't count. But I think it does mean something. It matters in terms of how he interacts with his players, and we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. How he is keeping them honest, so to speak, when they're making mistakes or if they're dogging it or whatever. Like, he does have authority. He's still an authoritative figure. He has the right to fill out the roster or the lineup card, whichever way he chooses. Ultimately, it comes down to when are you going to switch your pitchers out? Like, how do you utilize your bullpen? And that's, you know, beyond but that, that's how you're dealing with the interaction of your own players,
point,
and how you speak on behalf of the team, and that's where he dominates. I'll give him full credit, because he never snaps on reporters. He treats people well.
Oh, yeah.
He's a genuinely good guy. That's what it always comes off as. So I understand the reaction to not running him out of town. Not that he necessarily deserves to be. This is not his fault that they're this bad.
Well, that's
team.
My point. I mean, you can't really look at this record and this team in the circumstances they're in with the Yankees and Red Sox back to being the behemoths of the sport, you know, with all the money in the world, and now suddenly, you know, incredible talent pools of young players that are not going away for any, in probably a half decade. I mean, nobody looks at that and goes, oh, geez, this is about managing. This is about general managing. It's about player procurement. It's about what kind of budget you're willing to spend. It's about ownership. It's about, you know, building up a team of talent. And then the guy actually filling out the lineup card, as you say, is way down the list of their problems right now.
But from that standpoint, I mean, it makes you wonder why he'd ever want out. Because he has no pressure on him. John Gibbons has had the easiest season in the history of managing. And I know people say, well, his competitive nature would say he'd want to win. Of course. I'm not saying he wants to be on pace for 73 wins or whatever it is. Of course, he'd much prefer to be the Red Sox and on pace for 113 and have home field throughout the playoffs and hopefully winning a World Series. Ideally, that would be the setup here for Gibbons. I'm not disputing that he's not, you know, a gamer or he doesn't have this will to win. Of course he does. But in terms of coverage, in terms of expectation, in terms of pressure, in terms of talking points, I mean, at no point this year have we come in and been like, I can't believe John Gibbons is doing this, that, or the other. We may have spoken in generalities. You know, how's he going to handle this? Why is this guy in left field? Why doesn't this guy maybe get sat down because he didn't run out of ground ball or whatever? But for the most part, the whipping boys for this team have been in the front office. It's been Shapiro and Atkins.
Yeah.
And then Stroman, who's had an awful year, and a couple of other guys who have underperformed that you have to point out. But simply from a pressure on the hot seat standpoint, a guy who's still making pretty good money, you would think Gibbons would be like, ride this up, because I don't know when the manager is going to have heat on him in this city, because I don't expect them to be a very good team for a couple of years.
No. And I think, look, he's got another year pending on his contract, right? He's getting paid next year, whether if he gets fired, you know, they owe him for 2019. So that's probably part of the reason why he's not saying much on this. Like, if they want to let me go, they want to let me go. If he wants to do the reverse Kawhi Leonard and go from Toronto to San Antonio, which is where he lives, I think, Gibbons, he can do that, but he can't do it by quitting and getting paid. He's going to have to get fired. So whether or not these guys are going to fire him, it's hard to know. But why would they make the change? I guess here's my. I think it's not a bad move to make a change now, for one simple reason. It's a new chapter. You get the Vladdy Guerrero Jr. era beginning next season.
So are you saying now, like today?
No.
By the end of the year.
It doesn't matter when you do it this year. This year's a write-off.
But that does factor in, though. Like, we keep talking about that. The value of Vladdy Guerrero getting to the majors and understanding what it's like to be a major leaguer. If he's performing for a manager who's on his way out of town and maybe doesn't really want to be there anyway.
Assuming if they're going to call him up this year,
that's what I mean.
There seems to be some division on whether they will.
I don't think they should. You know, I've concluded that it doesn't make any sense. You've waited this long. If you were going to call him up 3 months ago and you're still technically in the race and he was lighting it up and you knew he was a major league hitter at that point, you decided not to do that and take your time with him. What's the point of bringing him up now? Especially because I think Shapiro and Atkins, really, their reputation and their credibility has taken such a hit this year because of the whole, we're trying to win for the fans stuff, where it was blatantly just about selling tickets. If you bring up Vladdy Guerrero, they'll sell it that it's about experience, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to see it as they're trying to sell some more tickets in September.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people would have that cynical viewpoint.
No doubt.
So do what's best for the organization long term, which in my opinion is still hold off on that service time and just have another year of control over him.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. I mean, this is the whole argument that we had with Steve Phillips last week on this very show was, Steve was pointing out, like, if it's about experience and letting this young kid experience Major League lifestyle, well, he's done that. He grew up around it, right? This is a kid that grew up with a father that's now in the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. So, you know, Vladdy Guerrero Jr. knows what it's like to be in a Major League clubhouse, if not as a Major League player. He's lived that life to a degree through his father and growing up around it. So I agree with you. Like, that's not the argument for bringing her up in September. The argument for bringing her up in September is to sell out maybe 10 or 15 games that you wouldn't otherwise sell out because people are excited about this guy. But then there's the whole secondary argument of control and the idea that if you just wait 12 days, you know, to do what the Cubs did with Chris Bryant way back in 2015, which was, you know, you don't bring him out of spring training in April. You send him back down to AAA for the first 12 days of the season. You bring him up after whatever it is, 12 days, and then you essentially get the extra year of service time where he's under contract to you and you don't have to pay him his free agent money until 2026 instead of 2025. That, to me, if this is the Cleveland model, if this is an organization running on the Shapiro-Atkins, let's be very efficient and lean, let's not spend an extra dime on anything, that's the way they're going to go.
Absolutely. And the Braves did it with Acuna Jr. Yeah, this year as well.
Exactly.
The Braves are in a playoff race.
Yes.
And he was the number one prospect in baseball. He was ranked even ahead of Vladdy Guerrero Jr. Guerrero has now taken his spot because he's in the major leagues. So
right.
that seems to make too much sense to me.
But the other one is, like, I've heard some people say around the team, you know, they need a bilingual manager. They need a manager that speaks Spanish. If your best player
simply
is going
because
to be,
of Guerrero Jr.
Well, if your best player is going to be essentially a primarily Spanish-speaking player, not that Vladdy Guerrero Jr. doesn't speak some English because he clearly does, but you need to speak to these guys in their first language. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., another one of their young studs that has a potential to be a core player going forward here, you're going to want to speak to him in his first language. And it's one thing to have a translator in the clubhouse, but I think there's a lot of teams, if you read around the league, there's definitely been a move toward preferring managers, not necessarily excluding managers who don't speak Spanish, but preferring managers who at least have a grasp of Spanish.
Well, I mean,
and I don't know if Gibbons does. I mean, it's frankly,
well,
I don't know if he does.
I'm not sure. I've never heard him speak Spanish.
I don't know.
But listen, I would say from that standpoint, maybe Ty goes to the Spanish speaker.
Right.
I'm not going out of my way to find an inferior manager, if that's the case. If someone else is available for you that only speaks English but is the right guy, I'm not moving past him because of one player.
No.
Who may demand out in a year or two anyway. Who knows? I mean, sports is a very fickle world. We
yes.
know that. And I think you'd also be towing a pretty dangerous line. This is a guy who's never played in the majors. He's already been hyped, unlike any player probably in the history of the franchise. And you're going to hire a manager specifically to speak to him directly?
Well, you'd never frame it that way.
But that's how it would
yeah.
be sold.
Yeah,
I mean,
you
that's
might.
How people would expect it to be explained at the very least.
Yeah, well,
I mean, again, if a guy's qualified and he can do it, by all means,
yeah,
go
for
it.
Well,
I would say that even if they didn't have a Spanish-speaking prospect coming
up. We've seen in hockey how, you know, the Montreal Canadiens put themselves in boxes they don't need to be in because they demand, you know, coaches and essentially GMs that speak French.
Right, but that's because of the culture and the place
yeah.
in which they live.
Right.
This isn't because of a specific player. This
no,
is a very different
but
story.
But it's because
Montreal,
you know,
I've always understood that.
Understood it too. But, you know, if you look at this, and it's a different situation. You can't compare the language issues, but hey, 30% of Major League players are first language Hispanics, right? So you need, like, if a third of the league speaks Spanish as their mother tongue, you got to respect that as an organization, right? I mean, I think the organizations that don't are making a mistake.
Well, I'm not saying you turn your back on it out of spite. Of course not. I'm saying, again, like I said, Ty goes
sure.
to the Spanish-speaking manager,
sure.
but I'm not going to go out of my way and exclude only English-speaking managers because they don't speak Spanish.
But my thing is, like, if the manager's powers have dwindled in this sport, and I think they have, like, you talk about, does the manager actually fill out the lineup card, or does the front office fill out the lineup card and give it to the manager?
Well, a lot of it is basic anyway. I mean,
well, it is, but I mean, you're telling me front offices in this day and age where you got all these Ivy Leaguers and analytics and sabermetrics guys that are crunching every number available, you're telling me those guys aren't telling managers how to fill out their lineup card, how to approach, you know, staggering the pitching rotation and
no more than any other sport.
I think it's a lot more. I think it's a lot more in baseball.
I think we'd hear about it by now because you're still dealing.
You hear about it.
Do you? I've never heard a manager come out and be like, because these guys still claim to have autonomy when it comes to what happens in the clubhouse and in the dugout. Mm-hmm. I mean, because you hear, it does happen in other sports. Like in hockey, there's an analytics department with every team that apparently, I've heard hysterical stories about coaches in this league who receive these emails every single day from the analytics crew saying, hey, this is an optimal lineup for what is happening right now or who we're going up against. And what I have heard is that almost to a man, the coaches either delete it immediately or print it off out of spite and then throw it in the garbage because they look at them and say, are you insane? You sit up there with your computers. I'll figure out what I'm going to do. There still is a battle in sports over what the coach and manager is allowed to pull off and what they're being told. And maybe it's a losing fight in baseball more than other sports, but I find it hard to believe, like Mike Socha's an old school guy who's been in Anaheim for like, what, 18 years?
Yeah.
I don't think the GM is going to him or some stats geek and saying, hey, I think it's in your best interest to hit Trout in the three hole tonight.
Right.
I think he'd say, actually, it's not. And if I ever see you again, I'm going to lay you out.
Yeah, but that's, look, I agree with you on hockey. Like, I wrote a column on the weekend talking to Rob Volman, who's one of the best hockey analytics writers. And Rob Volman kind of shocked me a little bit because we all thought the summer of analytics back in 2014, the NHL had sort of bought into analytics to a degree. But his point was most teams still only have one guy. They don't have an analytics crew. They got an analytics guy, one guy. And you know, the way Rob framed it, and he's pretty intimately involved in that community of people, even though he couldn't be too specific because he's consulted with teams and he can't get, you know, too specific about what's going on. But his point was there's still very little buy-in compared to baseball, where obviously Moneyball gave root and is the father sport or the mother sport of Moneyball, and compared to the NBA, where analytics are huge, and the NFL, obviously, where numbers are massive. Hockey's way the fourth in that race in terms of embrace of analytics. But when it comes to baseball, you know, managers didn't come up with the shift. The analytics department came up with the shift.
Absolutely. And the new age managers are buying into it. Look at Gabe Kapler in Philly. Like,
for sure,
he took immediate heat because he was sitting guys because of the lineup that they were going up against and different things that he was doing with his lineup and with his rotation. And I'm not saying that all the managers are against it or that any of them are necessarily against it. It's how they utilize it is where I would dispute that they're, you know, basically just backing down and saying, you guys tell me what to do and I'm just a puppet.
Well,
I don't think the managers are
puppets.
No,
but I think that tension is real. And I think that tension has been real with Atkins and Shapiro and Gibbons from day one. I think it was there less with Alex Anthopoulos because Gibbons was Alex Anthopoulos' guy.
And they were winning at that point for the most part.
But it's always there. And I just think that the smart managers who want to stay employed and don't want to be out on the, turfed out, they realize they're somewhat powerless against it. You can't fight these changes because the numbers are indisputable.
Well, and that's the thing about baseball. It's much more scientifically proven what works and what doesn't work. And you can look at the accumulation of numbers and come up with a pretty decent idea of what is actually happening and what's going to continue to happen in the future.
Right, which is why you don't see hit and runs. You don't see small ball.
Right.
That's why the strikeout has become king. It's why the home run has become king.
But that would speak to hockey being on the other end of it.
Hockey's
because it's such more random and there's so much more free-flowing and there's you're changing shift changes on the fly and you're up against different competition. It's not nearly as scientific and it never will be.
Well, no,
it's not possible.
But part of it
fully
is,
scientific.
I would argue, look, the Leafs, if you're a Leaf fan, you got to love this idea that they've been one of the few clubs that's actually invested heavily in analytics.
Right, they can invest all they want, but you think Babcock uses it all the time? I don't.
You know, no, maybe Babcock doesn't, but it's not, see, the one thing about analytics, I think it gets misconstrued. It's not just about who's got the best Corsi, and let's put those guys out there, ranked 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's not about that. It's analytics departments are about doing research to figure out problems and figure out solutions to problems, whether it's in the draft or whether it's in trades or whether it's scouring the league to find undervalued players that you might want to target in a trade. That's what an analytics department's for. It's not to tell the coach. Now, it could be used to tell the coach what's the best line to play, but as you say, the traditional hockey says that's probably not going to fly very often. But I'll tell you what, if you continue to make a great point, and, you know, the coach's point doesn't continues not to work, you know, I think you might win that argument over time if you frame it the right way. I think Kyle Dubas is, if you talk to Shanahan and you talk to people around that team, one of the things about Kyle Dubas that people respect is that maybe when he first got there, he talked a lot, and maybe he felt like he was a bit of a hotshot, but he learned, I think, over time to, you got to frame these arguments in a respectful way. And it can't just be, this is the best idea. This is an idea. Think about this.
Maybe. Yes.
And that might work. But when it comes to John Gibbons, you know, he's an old school guy. He's a Texan with the draw. I think his greatest skill has been to kind of rebuff the media or keep the media on side to a degree. But how much say has John Gibbons actually had in the way this team plays baseball? We don't know. Nobody's going to tell you this was the management's idea, this was the front office's idea. But I have to believe a lot less than he had maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah, I would think so. When he was here with Anthopoulos and Beeston, and that was, you know, he held much more power. I mean, that's obvious. He's working with guys who didn't hire him and have a very different viewpoint.
And the game's changed a lot.
The game has changed a lot. So we'll see. I mean, we'll talk to Steve Phillips about this just after 5. Like, what is the optimal managerial option going forward? What should they be looking for? Because I would... Just based on where the game is going and what Atkins and Shapiro appear to represent, you got to think younger, analytical, progressive type of manager. Basically a complete 180 of what we've had with Gibbons.
It's totally. It's about catering to the players.
And what's going to happen? The media here is going to blast it. That's what's going to happen.
Well, that's the thing. It's a bit like the Dwayne Casey situation, where Casey and Gibbons, geniuses in terms of their ability to communicate and become beloved, right? And I don't think it's calculated at all. I think that's just, they're genuinely guys that people like.
Right.
And
they're easy to gravitate to
because they're generally good people. Like they're fun to be around. They tell good stories. They know how to treat, you know, ex reporter who comes in once a week or once a year the same way as everybody else. Like they include everybody, they treat everybody with respect. Whereas, you know, we've had plenty of people in town. Babcock's a great example of, you know, condescension on a daily basis, treating everybody as though they have no idea what they're talking about. He is speaking from the mount, from the gospel of Babcock, and anybody who questions it or suggests that it isn't 100% accurate or 100% the truth, and that's, you know, capital T, capital R, capital U, capital T, capital H. I mean, you're kind of shunned. I mean, and there's a complete polar opposite. No one's going to cry when Mike Babcock gets fired.
No, I mean, he's got a prickly persona to him, and he always has, and he always will. And I wonder also if that is probably more of an ideal persona to have in that position, because the Leafs are always covered different than the other teams.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that they're not, you know, all these teams are covered properly, in my opinion. I think the media collectively does a pretty good job with all three teams, but the Leafs are just louder.
Yeah, for sure.
Louder, there's more of it, and the expectations just appear to be a little bit different in terms of what that coach has to bring or how that coach has to act. So
did he have to act that way in Detroit too?
Well,
because apparently he did.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. Yeah, you're right. Listen, that's who he is.
Is the job of the guy.
Yeah. I don't think he's doing it because this is like a game plan for him. I don't think behind the scenes Mike Babcock is a totally different person. I think what you see is what you get with Babcock.
Oh yeah, I think Mike Babcock, you know, is of the belief that he is speaking from the gospel of Babcock when he's talking to his friends too.
Right? Yes, and if you don't listen and accept it, then
that's just who he is. Hey, man.
Yeah, it's on you.
It's not a bad way to be.
Glenn Suter will join us. Johnny Manziel had that debut on Friday night. We're all looking forward to it. Massive anticipation. Created a lot of buzz for the CFL.
It did.
But it went horribly awry. Someone pointed this out. I can't even take credit for this. Someone sent me a tweet and said he went reverse Auston Matthews.
Yeah.
Where Matthews in his debut had 4 goals.
4 goals.
Johnny Football had 4 picks. And it was ugly. Very, very ugly. But it appears as if he's going to start again this weekend against Ottawa.
Well, you got to.
I guess you're into it. And everyone's crushing Sherman, the coach. This is not his problem. This is exactly what we were just talking about. The power of management and ownership.
Yep.
This manager, Kavis Reed, and this ownership in Montreal needs Johnny Manziel. They need the tickets to be sold. They need the buzz. They've obviously told him, this guy's playing.
He has to play.
We have to play him, and he's going to play. So Mike Sherman is basically a puppet in all this.
Yeah.
He's got to put him out there, even though maybe he doesn't feel like he's ready. And if you watched him last weekend, how could you possibly think he's ready? We'll get into that. The idea that Terrell Owens is working out for the Riders, could it become an actual scene where T.O., who turns his back on Canton, Ohio in the Hall of Fame. We got to get into that story, too, the way that the Hall of Famers have responded to Terrell Owens not showing up in Canton this weekend. But he's working out for the Riders. Maybe he ends up in the CFL as well. Dave Festchuk's in here from the Star. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues on the TSN app. All right, Glenn Suter coming up from the CFL on TSN, looking back on Johnny Manziel's ugly debut for the Alouettes on Friday night, what we can expect out of him this weekend. Terrell Owens, could he actually end up in the CFL? We're talking about the Jays to kick off the show, and they took 3 of 4 in Seattle. And there are a lot of fans down there, like you always expect, and that's cool. It's a cool scene. I mean, it feels kind of like a home game on the road. But did you see that story about the streaker on Saturday night? The guy who, and this was like real streaking, because that's always a big battle. Like we call it streaking over here when anybody just runs on the field. But if you talk to the Brits, they're like disgusted by that definition of streaking, because British streaking or European streaking is fully naked running on to the playing surface.
Yes.
Like fully naked.
And that's what this was.
And this guy geared down, reportedly over an $80 bet, did the whole thing, caused a big scene, and then he got arrested for it. Not surprisingly. I mean, if you run on the field, you're getting thrown in the drunk tank at the very least, even if you haven't had a sip.
Yes.
They're like, you're going in the drunk tank.
And rightly so.
Even though you're sober, yes. But did you hear how this is unraveled now?
Yes.
Because it turns out he's an Irish national. He's an Irish guy. But he lives in Canada.
Yes, Vancouver.
Vancouver. But they're going to deport him, more than likely, back to Ireland.
Not a Canadian citizen. Apparently is probably going to be deported to Ireland because of an $80 bet that he was, you know, game enough to take up and hit the field in his birthday suit.
Isn't this an example of just extremism going too far, though? Like, I don't support streaking or running on the field. A lot of it's just stupid, and you're wasting everybody's time. But it's really not that harmful. It's really not that big of a deal, and it's certainly not worth shipping a guy back to Ireland when you could just be like, go back to Canada. Like, because he's just going to fly to Vancouver now. He's going to land in Belfast and fly right back to Vancouver, you know, I would assume.
You know what it is, though? It's like knowing, I know a little bit about the security guys that work for these teams, and they just get so tired of this stuff that they want the harshest penalty possible to be as public as possible so people just stop doing this stuff. Because it's just a headache for the security guys, right? They got to fill out reports.
Right.
I mean, they got to, it's a nothing night. Everything's going fine, and then some idiot over $80 ruins your night if you're the security guy.
But wouldn't it technically be considered deporting him if you just sent him back to Canada?
Yeah, but now they're informing the Canadian authorities that this guy's documents don't check out, and you know he's committed an offense in the States, and now that makes him, I don't even know.
So like ICE is after this guy now?
Well, we don't have, thankfully, I don't think Canada has an ICE yet. Let's hope it doesn't go that way.
Right.
Hopefully we stay ICE free here. In terms of Donald Trump's favorite immigration authority. But yeah, I guess they're going hardline on him and saying, hey, buddy, like, you know, you screwed us over in the States, and now we're going to do everything we can to screw you over in your documentation up in Canada. I don't know the intricacies of the immigration situation, but it sounds like he's in trouble.
Yeah, right back to Ireland and then flying back to Vancouver. It sucks. Like, that's a terrible, terrible move. But
especially if you wanted to stay in Vancouver. We have no idea.
We would assume that that's the case. But anyway, Glenn Suter will join us from the CFL on TSN in 2 minutes. Brandon Drury, now on the DL, tweeted this out before the show. You're not officially a Blue Jay until you go on the DL. So welcome aboard, Brandon. It's great to have you here in Toronto.
Yeah, really.
It's just great to have you.
Join your mentor, Tulo, on the
DL. And Donaldson, for that matter.
And Donaldson. On the DL.
Yeah, because Donaldson, I just read a tweet, Scott Mitchell tweeting out, like, it doesn't even sound like he's sprinting or jogging or anything. Like, no one knows what's going on
with
this guy.
He's in Florida. Yeah. What he's doing there, no one's sure.
Nobody knows. Johnny Football Friday night, making his debut in Montreal, was ugly. The anti-Austin Matthews debut, as someone pointed out to me over the weekend. And in chat about it, we're joined now by the man, the myth, the legend from the CFL on TSN. Here's Glenn Suter. How you doing, Glenn?
I'm well, Brian. How are you?
We're doing really well. So can you find any positives out of what you saw from Manziel on Friday night?
Well, the only positive is that there's only one direction he can go, and that's to be better than that. And, you know, I think we can go back and analyze the should he, could he, would he, and all of that. It's an interesting dynamic because I think we all agree that he was forced in too early, but when you're analyzing that, you have to look at both parties, Mike Sherman and Johnny Manziel, and take yourself into that meeting and say, at what point did they look at each other and go, yep, I'm ready, after 4 or 5 days of practice? You know, I think both bear some responsibility here when it comes to the decision to rush Johnny Manziel into the game. And, of course, management was probably pushing and all of that to sell tickets, of course, but that I think, what is sort of missing here, that it's not switching blame from Manziel and a bad performance to the head coach and Mike Sherman. That was a decision that they both made. And clearly, I mean, you'd have to ask them to find out exactly why or how much they did know of the playbook and how prepared he really was and all of that. But the proof is in the evidence, and didn't look good.
Well, take us into the mindset of a football player, football team, a room. I mean, if it got out that Sherman, the head coach in Montreal, went to Manziel and said, you're up, first team, man, be ready to rock come Friday night, and Manziel said, no, I can't start, I'm not ready, what would the reaction be?
Well, I don't think, first of all, you're having that conversation in front of your teammates, but if you're sitting in the room with the coach and you're being honest as a quarterback saying, hey, guys, I have a lot to learn here. Are you sure we want to do this right out of the gate? I mean, yeah, I think the competitive aspect of it, and let's be honest, I think Milt Siegel even put it on Twitter recently that when Americans come up here from huge NFL careers or college football careers south of the border with great resumes, they have that, some of them have that ego and that confidence level that they're going to dominate here. They're going to walk on the field and dominate. And again, you'd have to ask Mike Sherman and Johnny Manziel this question, but maybe there was an element of that. You know, we don't really need to understand CFL defenses because you're that good. And maybe that was, you know, I'm speculating here, but maybe that was part of the conversation. And when Johnny Manziel, if that happened, heard that, sure, the competitor in him says, yeah, coach, I'm with you. Let's go give it a shot. But, you know, clearly he wasn't ready. And now the question is what happens moving forward? And you know, they basically have untied the boat from the dock and the ship is sailing now. So they're going to have to hope that Johnny Manziel is a fast learner, is going to put in the time, because that was an interesting note from June Jones today or yesterday in one of the articles written out of Hamilton, where he said, you know, now, I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, now Johnny Manziel is going to have to start to prepare as if he's a starter, early in the morning, late at night kind of stuff. Well, I'm not sure what he was implying there, but if he was in any way implying that he wasn't doing that in Hamilton, then that's a problem. That's an issue.
Yeah, no doubt, Glenn. I mean, but when you look at it, I mean, there's a lot of people that would say if you're making a business case here, if you're looking at the Alouettes, they're 1-6, they're last in the league. What do the Alouettes have to lose to just giving this guy some run here, you know, and letting him have an extended run of starts to try and learn this league? Because the upside, you know, given this guy's fame and stature in the sporting world on this side of the border and the other side, it, to me, is an opportunity that the CFL just can't pass up.
No, I agree. Like, I was in the game in Montreal. I was calling that game, and I'd look at the crowd and their reaction, and I've never seen anything like it, honestly, where a crowd so badly wanted a player to succeed. And with all the issues he had in the first 15 minutes of that game and throwing interception after interception, I saw a crowd after a first down where he scrambled and looked like that Texas A&M college quarterback, that they just erupted. And for the next first down, so a 20-yard drive where he finally had some semblance of success, they were on their feet. It was a standing ovation for this guy. No, I get it. He's different. He's the only player other than an injury situation, when you run out of players and you just go on the street and find a guy because you just have run out of safeties, or you've, you know, your quarterbacks have, you've lost three or four in a year or in 2 weeks, and you have to go find a guy off the street and get him in the game because you have no choice.
Right.
Other than that scenario, I've never seen a player get the starting nod without earning it. And really, that's what we're watching now. But this is a different guy. And, you know, I get all those other angles and those business angles and the upside possibility when you look at a piece of tape from Texas A&M.
Which was a long time ago. I mean, people forget that. He won the Heisman, what, 5 years ago? So, and that's in college. This is pro football. And we're chatting with Glenn Suter of the CFL on TSN. And this is the problem that I think Manziel has. And he needs to recognize that this is going to take a long time. Like, if he actually wants to get back to the NFL, call up Doug Flutie, and Flutie will tell you it took him 8 or 9 years to get there. He's
right.
Not getting there next year. It is not happening. So, for me, it's always been about him proving that he's committed to being a pro football player, not living the lifestyle of a pro football player, not being a celebrity, not doing podcasts and being a, you know, blowing up Instagram and Twitter and all that kind of stuff and getting the money sign going. If you really want to be a pro football quarterback, it's probably in his best interest to not play a snap this whole year. Like, he hasn't been in training camp. He hasn't been in locker rooms. He hasn't been around the team in 2 years. He hasn't played pro football in over 2 years prior to showing up in the CFL. It's probably in his best interest to sit out a full year. But I don't think he would ever be willing to do that. I don't think he has that kind of patience.
Yeah, Brian, I don't think they're going to do that. And you're right. But, you know, you're bang on. You cannot walk into a pro locker room as a brand. You know, when you're brand new, no matter what your resume, you can't walk in and say, I am a brand. This is Johnny Manziel, the brand. Here's my merchandise. Here's my podcast. Here's my history. Here's my resume. You just can't do that. You walk into, and I'm not suggesting he is, but if there is another positive side here, he would have learned the respect for the game, for the CFL, and for his opponent after that game against Hamilton. I mean, at the very least, right now, if he thought he was going to come up and dominate, again, you'd have to ask him that question, but if he thought he was going to just step on the field and dominate, he got the lesson that many, many former Heisman Trophy winners, NFL players, have learned, that you have to respect the process, respect the level of skill in the game in Canada, respect your opponent always, and go out there and put your best on the table. And that includes the work week and everything involved in it and getting to know your teammates and the rhythm. I think it would be a great example to call Doug Flutie, because some people are using Doug Flutie as the opposite scenario here, that saying that, you know, Doug Flutie was one of the NFL players that came up and dominated the league and then went back down south. Doug Flutie came up and threw more interceptions than touchdowns in his first year. Doug Flutie lost his first game as a starter in the CFL. Then he grew great respect for the game and the opponents that he was facing, and he became a great star based on his skill set. That's exactly the path Johnny Manziel needs to take. I'm hoping for it, like you guys are. I mean,
yep.
What a great story it would be in redemption and everything. I think there's a lot of people cheering for this story and for this guy. But he's got to pay the price. He's got to go in and roll up his sleeves and do the grind work that's going to show up on game day.
Always appreciate you taking time for us. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you, Glenn.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.
There's Glenn Suter of the CFL on TSN. Manziel's playing again this week. He's taking first-team reps in practice. So they made that decision last week, or when they acquired him, that he was going to play it out.
You got to play him.
But really, I think it's now. It can't get any worse, you would assume. It can't get any worse.
It could get worse.
Well, it could get worse if he gets like smoked and gets injured, yeah. And then he's done. But four picks and what was it, 12, 15 attempts?
20 attempts.
He overall, 11 20
for
attempts.
20, four picks. He only gained like 100 plus yards.
Yeah, it was ugly. It was terrible.
Ugly.
Now, Montreal is terrible too, and that's not going to change.
Well,
even if Manziel gets better, the team's brutal.
I was going to say, you could have Doug Flutie playing quarterback for you with that line.
You have Tom Brady playing.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to matter.
Yeah, no, it's true. Steve Phillips in about 20 minutes. Mike Johnson, our buddy from TSN Hockey, will join us on The NHL Network's top 20 centers list. This is August material in a nutshell.
Oh, big time.
And it has caused a scene online. And I think Toronto Maple Leaf fans are going to be very excited to hear why it's caused such a scene. We'll tell you about that in the next hour.
You can leave the city behind this summer and still follow Toronto sports. Use the TSN app and your car's Bluetooth connection to stream TSN 1050 anywhere you go. Now, back to Overdrive. The greatest moments in history are now up to you. This is TSN 1050's Sound Wars.
Yeah! All right, we're down to the Elite Eight of Sound Wars, and it's time for a conference championship matchup.
Ooh.
Here we go, Dave. In the Yes Guy, No Guy conference, it is seed number one.
Friday pre-tapes, you're into this
I'm
kind of stuff.
So excited. I wish I was in my car, like driving around.
All right, so this is a Vegas legend. I caught up with him earlier this afternoon. Mac Jameson. Mac, what's happening?
Is this Brian?
This is Brian.
Did that just cut out?
This is a joke, isn't it? I'm calling you out.
I don't know who you're talking about, man.
You were my boy. We were peas and carrots 2 minutes ago, and you just wall squat great white sharded right in my yip. Mac Jameson? I want to hear the beginning again, because I guarantee if I hear the guy's voice, I'll tell you who it is.
All right.
Is this Brian?
This is Brian.
I quit the show.
So that's the number one seed. That's going to be a tough one to beat. Mac Jameson, the Vegas legend.
That's a good one.
That's a very good one. Now, this is the number two seed, so this is a very predictable bracket, or part of the bracket, I guess. The one and two seed matching up in the conference championship.
What did Gretzky say?
You miss 99% of the shots you don't take.
I think it was 100.
Actually, it was 100.
That's a pretty good one, too. So that's the number two seed. Go to tsn1050.ca, click on Sound Wars, and vote for your favorite. Mac Jameson or 99% of the shots you don't take. Voting for this Sound War closes tomorrow at 8 a.m. Listen to Landsberg in the morning for the Yes Guy, No Guy Conference Champion. And for the start of a Final Four Sound Wars battle right here on TSN 1050. Steve Phillips will join us in the next hour. We're going to catch up with Mike Johnson as well. The great Stan Mikita passed away today from your hometown of St. Catharines, Ontario.
Yeah, he was from Czech Republic, of course, but he came to St. Catharines, I think, in grade three. What a legend. I mean,
stats are off the charts.
His 15-year prime haze. I mean, people don't realize, because the Blackhawks weren't always very good. They won the Cup in 61. But his 15-year prime, nobody in the league over those 15 years scored more points than Stan Mikita, and nobody had more penalty minutes.
So we'll talk a little bit about his legacy, because it is a great one. Also, in pop culture, Stan Mikita's in Wayne's World is where they used to hang out.
Stan Mikita Donuts.
Such a great spot. That's coming up in the next hour. Dave Feschuk's in here from the Star. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050. Time now for a News Talk 1010 traffic update.
Four issues on the 401, still on the go. Westbound Collectors past Leslie, crash in the right lane. Westbound Express past the Allen, stall in the right lane. Westbound past the 409, the vehicle rollover blocking three left lanes. And 401 westbound Collectors past Renforth, crash is in the left lane. New in-town collision at Kipling and Dundas, same at Steeles, west of Bathurst. It's Leon's 50-50 sale for limited time. Get 50% off specials and take 50 months to pay. No interest, OAC. See leons.ca for details. From the News Talk 1010 Traffic Center, I'm Dan Dealey.
Tomorrow on Landsberg in the Morning, Mark Rowe joins me, Matt Cause, as we look at the biggest stories in the NFL involving Andrew Luck and Odell Beckham Jr. with former GM Mark Domenech.
Catch Landsberg in the Morning tomorrow from 6 till 10 on TSN 1050.